This Week in Nature is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for your free 30 days trial at audibletrial.com/TWIA for your free audiobook.
Everybody, this is Bernard Leong. This is This Week in Asia, episode 112. Okay, now, I'm supposed to have a lot of guests tonight, but ends up that they all suddenly have something going on. So, I only have one guest tonight, and he's no other than Serkan Toto. Hi, Serkan, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
How's Japan treating you? Or how, you've been traveling to Southeast Asia recently, right?
Yes, I've been to Singapore, Malaysia, and the Philippines for about 4 weeks. I came back just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, we met in Singapore. I think you were doing some of the scenes and for the E27 event, etc.
I was speaking at a conference in Singapore, and then by coincidence, E27 organized an event in Manila, and I was there, which was a good coincidence time wise. And I spoke a little bit there, and then I moved to Malaysia for a few days, but mostly, just to spend time there with my family as a family vacation. But I worked all the time, actually, so it was not much of a vacation for me.
So I guess this will be sort of like a very in-depth tour for you, Singapore, Malaysia, Philippines, right? And do you go to Indonesia as well?
I've not on this trip, no.
Yeah, but what was your feel now? I mean, Philippines it seems to be getting very hot lately. I know Gwen also has been there for last week, I think, together with Plug and Play to look at the Philippines ecosystem.
Yes, so I mean, the Philippines, I just 10 minutes before this recording started, I posted on TechCrunch, which I'm still contributing to. An article about a Manila-based startup called Twit Music, which is, the name suggests, a social music service based on Twitter. But apart from Twit Music and maybe two or three other startups, there's still not much going on, right? I mean, even I talked with a lot of engineers, with a lot of designers, with a lot of entrepreneurs, et cetera, and they all basically tell me that that the Startup Weekend Manila, which took place like in fall last year, that was like that basically kickstarted kind of like a startup. Startup feeling among the ecosystem, or among the people who are active in the startup scene over there, which is still very, very small. This is my point, I guess. It's very, very small. It's very, very small, and it's very, very young. Mm. So I wouldn't even speak of an ecosystem.
Right.
There's not enough structure at this point. But I have no doubt that this will come.
Yeah, they do have one startup that was funded earlier by Joey, which is InSync. They do something very similar to Dropbox, but for Google Apps. They do have engineers, they do have talent, and they're English speaking as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's like a large domestic market. So they have over 90 million people. English is an official language. There's a strategic location in Asia. There's a lot of IT talent over there, especially in the gaming field, by the way, which I'm really interested in. Mm-hmm. But also in other fields. But still, the Philippines have one problem, and this is a brain drain, right? So a lot of the good people leave the country, or they go to other companies in order to make money there. Mm-hmm. And so I had the feeling that there's a lot of risk aversion over there.
Right.
But again, as I said, I don't think there's a way that the Philippines will not become the next big country in startups out of Asia. Mm. I mean, it's just poised to be the next big market, in my eyes, at least.
Right. But you were in town, so you've been to the JFDI. So maybe my question to you, what do you do there?
I'm a mentor of in the program. So yeah. I spent in Singapore. I spent around 10 days. I spoke to the startups about PR and communications.
Yep.
And then I, you know, did some individual mentoring sessions, and you know, so and I met, I'm one of the startups of JFDI, which is based out of Singapore. I later met in Manila because it was a Philippines-based company, and I did some mentoring there, et cetera, et cetera. But it was mostly focused on mentoring in the PR and communications fields.
Mm. How do you find them so far? I mean, is there any ones that, you know, sort of very interesting to you, et cetera? The demo day is coming, I think, in about 2 to 3 weeks' time, I think, on the 4th of May, yeah.
Yes, I would say that that overall, you know, with all these startup programs, I think it was you always have a mixed selection of startups. So some are really good, some are, I would say, are like so-so. I mean, the idea is good, but the execution hasn't been done that well at this point. I mean, I was there when they were like halfway through the program. So it's a 100-day program, and I was there around the 50-day mark. I mean, they still had a lot of time. But yep, overall, I think it's much, much better than I expected, actually.
Okay. I was there day 36. I'm also a mentor, but I did a lot more on product side. So now a lot of it now is pivoting and consolidation. Yeah, on that.
What do you think about the quality, by the way?
I think some are pretty good. Some of them requires certain knowledge of a certain what I call a niche industry. They have one that is called Ask Wellbe. It's quite cute. It's this voice recognition app where you say it's for kids, I think, but it's only on Android. They should have done one on iOS where you say when you say something, and then you will sort of read the Wikipedia entry on that. It's a very good app. It actually works and it has a very nice design element. It was a big pivot for the two founders who I happen to know from Hackerspace. They used to do intelligent toys, making use of Facebook to manipulate toys, you know, allow people to control from web interface, you know, to sort of interface toys. But it seems that that idea was sort of pushed away because there's a lot of difficulty in trying to engage the toy industry in Singapore.
I met those two guys too. I mean, at that point, it was more or less just an idea.
Yeah,
but it's a pretty good idea, right?
Mm.
But you know, it's a lot of times when I talk to startups in Asia, and this is probably now the VC in me, which I am not. So I'm not a VC, but a lot of the times when I talk to startups, especially in Asia, I think just a small fraction of the startups are making, are thinking about what happens after launch.
Yep.
You know, so the user acquisition, marketing, distribution side of things is not really thought through that well, usually.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, big weakness of Asian startups in particular. I don't know how you feel.
Yep.
But this is something what was most striking for me when I heard what all of these companies are doing.
Mm. I agree with you on that because when I was doing my product management talk, I tried to split the distribution into two types. One is the PR side, which obviously you're the better expert than me, basically to generate awareness, generate the marketing buzz about the company, etc. There is the second part, which I find that they are very lacking, is to increase the distribution of users. How do you get more users? How do you make use of social tools to bring the function of growing more users?
Those,
I think I have seen some very good things they've done in Japan, China, and in the US. You know, the way they can rapidly, virally grow very quickly.
Right.
Their functions that you can make people really addicted to it. But I haven't seen a lot in this part of Southeast Asia, basically.
Right. You know, it's always alarming when you ask, you know, how the app, for example, is supposed to acquire users, and people say, well, you know, we are connected to Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's your only answer, then you're headed for a lot of trouble down the road, right? Because it's such a saturated market, especially in mobile and in social. So the solo mode space, right? I mean, it's so full. So when you don't have an unbelievably interesting, unique app, or really, really good user acquisition strategy, you will have it very, very hard to make it in the market. So this is just my personal observation.
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, just before we head to the biggest topic of the day, which I already want to talk to you about, I wanted to hear your thoughts on Facebook's acquisition of Instagram.
I think it's awesome.
Oh yeah.
I think, you know, I think it's for the Instagram founders, I think it's just an awesome exit. But I think that this is the unicorn, right? I think that this happens even in Silicon Valley. This happens once every years. I think I don't even think that, you know, other startups can really learn from that experience. Mm. I think it's just a one-time miracle kind of happening. I don't know what you feel about it, but I don't think it's a typical event.
Yeah, I think I don't know. It's the way I've been reading, it feels that, you know, Facebook sort of acquired the company in a very knee-jerk reaction, and they try to do the deal very quickly because the company just received money like a week ago for a $500 million valuation.
Yes.
For the investors, it's like, wow, we just doubled our money, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Zuckerberg just panicked. You know, when he saw the spike in usage, etc. And not panicked, but you know, he was. I think that he was just impressed by the traction that the app was seeing in its early days, and you know, it racked up like millions of users in a few days. I think like 10 million users in 10 days or something?
Yeah, correct, for the Android platform, because they were always sort of like distinct on the iOS platform. So they released the Android app, I think, about 3 weeks ago. And the first day, it was already 1 million users, basically.
Right,
it was
just
unbelievable. It's like, what? 1 million users on Android platform? You've got to be kidding me, right?
So yeah. And I think, you know, I think that Zuckerberg saw that and just said, okay, we have to go through with the deal.
Right. So, anyway, but I mean, that also means, well, I just received news today that Path has received 40 million. So wherever Path is going to go is going to be interesting now.
Right. But I heard the valuation for Path is just in quotation marks, a quarter billion or something?
Yeah, it's quarter billion, which I thought it might be even higher now. But I think they had 2 million users, so they couldn't value it that much higher.
Right.
But, you know, I sort of hope that Path can stay independent for a while, because it's a very interesting app, and there's so much more that they can do with it, etc. Yeah, on that. But, okay, I want to sort of tap your brain. You're based in Japan, right?
Right.
Yep. Can you tell me a little bit more about... There were two stories that really got me really, really interested. And they are written by you. One of them is written by you, actually. You know about the one about Jeff Bezos trying to make Japan sales go by 30%? So how's Amazon actually operating in Japan at the moment?
It's very much operating like anywhere else. So the design of the homepage, for example, is the same. It's also a B2C model, just like everywhere else. They have also Amazon marketplaces, for example, for the B2B to C side. And they're doing very, very well, especially because they were in Japan. They started becoming active in Japan in the Stone Age in 2000. So they have a 12-year-old history. So it's an established brand here in Japan. A lot of people know Amazon, etc. So they're doing very, very well here. So, but there are no significant super Japan-specific or Japan-only features over here.
So are they going to do any more specific Japans, or is sort of the decree that they want to increase their sort of footprint in Japan now in terms of sales, in terms of revenue drivers?
Yes. So I mean, the e-commerce sector here is growing rapidly, and Amazon Japan obviously wants to be a part of it. So they want to add distribution centers to the 9 existing distribution centers that they have here over here. They want to deliver faster, offer more items, especially in the food and fashion categories.
Yep.
I mean, they have, you know, in what they do. In this B2C model that they have, they don't, and in this, you know, very general approach that they have, I mean, you know, you can almost get anything on Amazon.
Yep.
They're basically in this scale, they're basically without any competition over here.
Is that so? I used to buy CDs from CD Japan, where the interface looks really like Amazon.
Yeah, CD Japan is like, that's a very, very vertical offering.
Yeah,
right?
It's
very vertical. I'm a fan
of CD Japan, by the way. I buy my favorite Yuki Nishimura CDs. Oh, that's my favorite pianist, actually. So I buy all her CDs every year religiously from CD Japan.
Yeah, I think they are not doing that well anymore.
Really?
I don't even think I don't even know if they're still around. I mean, could be because
oh, they're still around. They're still around.
Okay.
Yeah,
and they've been around for so many years now.
And they can't get themselves acquired by Amazon, basically.
Right.
Okay. Well, I mean, the Cyber Brothers have done a big Amazon clone now in UAE down to Southeast Asia, so it's going to be pretty simple because Amazon has never sort of expanded the way I see the company has never expanded the footprint beyond Japan. So
mm-hmm.
It sort of made me wonder after reading your post, is are they basically trying to, you know, push into the Asia market bigger? Is this sort of a sign that it's going into a bigger Asia market, basically?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that for Amazon here in Japan, I think the opportunity is in the short term, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have 100 million web users here with high purchasing power.
Yeah.
I mean, if you compare this to a large country like Indonesia, for example,
mm-hmm.
it's just a fraction of Japan, right? I mean, not only the web population, but also the purchasing power.
Yep.
So I think they are correct in focusing on the low hanging fruit first and like skimming the Japanese market first, but I think they will go to other markets when all those emerging economies when the web economies in these emerging economies grow. I think that Amazon will go there too. There's no doubt in my mind.
Right. The other story I sort of thought would be interesting is about Twitter. So it seems that Twitter wants to have a bigger footprint in Japan. I thought they're really pretty big in Japan in terms of advertising. Their brand pages recently launched their brand pages recently in Japan, etc. I mean, is it because it's still touching the tip of the iceberg, or is the market really bigger than it can stretch for?
I think that the market for Twitter is huge. I mean, by some measures, they have the third biggest user base here in Japan worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
When you compare the user accounts, the registered user accounts,
yeah.
I think it's close to 30 million. I mean, in a web population of 100 million, that's a pretty high penetration.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, Japan is a wealthy country. There's a lot of advertising yen here. Twitter has been doing ads and has been profitable with ads here in Japan for years now.
Yeah, they that's the first market they actually make money, not the U.S. market actually,
right,
for a very long time. If I didn't get it wrong on that. But
they're not only super popular in Japan but also profitable.
Yeah, they just recently hired somebody from Google. So I think it's one of the country managers for India to be the VP for international expansion.
Right.
Asia.
Right.
So it's going to base out of India, but I don't know how they're going to build their offices up, etc.
Right.
Okay, but what about social games? Your space. You've been writing a lot of stories. You know, every now and then I see your website, circantoto.com, is all the different games, etc. You know, I know you talk a lot about GRI and mobile DNA.
DNA, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what's been happening in the social game scene now in Japan?
There's two reasons why I focus on this industry. So first of all, I'm an economist by education, in
yes.
quotation marks.
Yes, sorry, we call you Dr. Sakantoto. You had a PhD
exactly.
in economics.
Exactly. And I personally think, and I'm saying this very often, that you know the social gaming industry, especially in Japan, just has the best business model, just by looking at the financials, the best business model that the mobile and the web industry and the gaming industry has ever seen, and maybe will be seeing in the foreseeable future. I think that the business model is just better than weapons, better than drugs, better than prostitution. This is what I always say, right? I think
really?
It's just awesome from an economic perspective.
So how's the economics different then? If I'm asking the wrong question or the right question, I mean,
I think it's absolutely the right question. I think, you know, those guys are basically, they are selling pixels for virtual pixels for real money. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, but you in Japan, you don't have the virtual currency cannot be converted back to the real currency, right?
It cannot be, but you know, people are finding ways of trading virtual items. If you really want to, you can do it.
So you do it on an eBay kind of
yes.
platform?
Yes. I mean, in Japan, eBay is not really popular, so you go to Yahoo Japan auctions.
Mm.
You can sell off, and it's a big problem for the industry because it's this real money trading, this off-platform real money trading of virtual items has become a bit of a problem. In the local industry, because now thousands of people are doing it. So if you go to Yahoo Japan auctions and if you look for virtual items, you can see thousands of them being auctioned off. And this is actually not allowed under the terms of service,
right?
By the two big platform providers of social games here in Japan, but people are still doing it.
Yeah,
but usually it's a platform providers that make the most money, and nobody else.
Correct. So it's GREE and DNA basically.
Yes, GREE and DNA with Mobage.
Right, yeah. but like for example, there was one post in your blog that talks about like there's also games that don't go onto these two big publishers.
Yes,
are they committing suicide in the form of social games? I mean, in your opinion,
that's a good question. I mean, I think it remains to be seen at this point. So, but what should be a little bit of a red flag for GREE and DNA. Is that, you know, that the top games, the top two games at the moment, the top grossing apps in the entire Japanese app store are social games that are not using the two big social gaming platforms.
Wow.
So they're basically independent, platform-free social games
mm-hmm.
that just use, you know, basically mechanics that they have baked into their own games. They're not making use of the social networking functionalities that GREE and Mobage provide.
So are they mobile games? Are they more likely to be mobile games or are they more likely to be web-based kind of social games?
They're mobile social games, so they're basically individually downloadable social games.
Oh, so that means they can actually independently exist outside of the two big
yes.
platforms.
Yes, apparently, yeah. So one game has been the number one money maker in the entire app store here in Japan for the past 8 weeks.
Right, Puzzles and Dragons, right? You're talking about
Puzzles and Dragons, yeah. So it's super popular and it's great. It's a great game. I mean, that's
have you played it?
The biggest reason.
Have you been playing it?
Oh yeah.
What is it? What's the game like? Is it a
It's called genre wise. It's called a puzzle RPG. So it's basically a role playing game, but you don't go and slay monsters with swords or with magic tricks or something. But you have to solve, a bit like Tetris, like columns, like puzzles.
I'm looking at the page now. It looks a little bit like Bejeweled, but I know it's not.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the screen splits in half, and on the top half you see the monster that you have to defeat. On the bottom half you see the puzzle that you have to solve. And depending on how quick and how good you are in solving the puzzle, you can defeat the monster.
Right. It reminds me of, you know, the early days of Street Fighter called Puzzle Fighter.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, that's one of my favorite
exactly.
games.
Yeah, so they're going a little bit in that direction. That's true. It's basically a mashup between an RPG and a puzzle game.
So I would say that if for any games that they want from outside of Japan trying to come into Japan, is it going to be much difficult unless they work with both the two largest platforms?
Yes, I think that these two large platforms, I mean, they do anything they can in order to support especially foreign social game makers. And usually the way it works is that if you are a social game developer in Japan, you go through these platforms. I think that these 1, 2, 3, 4 games that are relatively successful as standalone social games in the App Store in Japan are exceptions.
Right, right. Yes. Social games, when we talk about social games, we can't get out of Zynga, basically. How are they in Japan, then? Are they just like one player, or they're nowhere near GREE and DNA?
Yes, Zynga is a little bit of a different play because Zynga is not a platform provider. I mean, they are now with Zynga.com,
yep.
But here in Japan, they are not providing it, providing the platform so far. And even in the US, business is relatively slow because developers are reluctant to jump on the platform.
Yep.
But as game providers, I mean, they bought one startup here in Tokyo 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one game that was made by this startup before Zynga came in is still doing relatively well on Mixi, but the original games that Zynga has been offering here in Japan, they all flopped. So Zynga in Japan is not doing well at all at the moment.
Okay. Then a lot of the efforts also in China as well. Is that the same situation happening? Or are you familiar with the Chinese side as well?
I'm not that familiar with how Zynga is doing in Japan in China. But they have a studio there, so they also acquired a Beijing based startup. Also, I think about 2 years ago.
Yep.
I've never heard even one good thing coming out of there as well.
That'll be interesting to see. I guess from what I understand from you, so it's still very Japanese centric kind of technology space in Japan.
Absolutely. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. I mean, the social gaming industry here is very, very domestic. So there's only one social game company that has made it big in Japan, and that's Riku coming out of China.
Yeah,
that's basically the only one.
Really, that difficult?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well,
it's a very specific market.
So let me ask you: are you going to be in Japan for a while, or are you going to be traveling again?
Yes, I'm going to be. I'm going to be traveling in June to B-Launch, this big startup event in Seoul.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I probably will miss E27's E27's event. Yeah.
Yeah. 2012. Yes.
Yes, and another big event that's going on in Japan. So I'm invited there as a speaker. So this is why I'm going there, and it's going to be a relatively big event as far as I can gather. But I have no plans of moving out of Japan permanently. Actually.
Okay. I'm going to call you on the Korea one. So you can tell me more about what Korea is, what's happening in Korea. Because we used to talk to Chang, but he's currently, I think he moved over to the US for a while. So we have very little coverage about how the Korea tech scene is like.
Right, basically. Right.
Yeah, so basically, well, that sums up for today. So what is going to be, how do our audience going to find you then?
Best way is on Twitter, I would say. Follow like Serkan Toto,
yeah,
which is basically my first name and my last name in one word. But I would advise everybody just to follow me if you're really interested in Japanese technology and Japanese startups and Japanese gaming news only, because that's the only thing that I'm tweeting about. Nothing else.
Cool. So all our readers, please @ Serkan Toto, okay? @ Serkan Toto.
Right. Yes, please do.
We are going to start one segment, new segment recently called Recommend a Startup. So do you have any that you want, that you've gone through and just give us one?
As I mentioned, I was traveling to Manila a couple of days ago, and there a startup pitched to me that's just 6 months old.
Yep.
It's called Twit Music, a social music service that uses Twitter as a distribution channel and as a promotion channel for artists.
Mm.
So artists can upload and share songs in basically a few minutes, and users can listen they can log in with their existing Twitter accounts, and they can listen to music on the platform for free.
Yep.
And they can engage with their artists directly, and they can share songs very, very easily, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an awesome startup, which just got accepted into 500 startups.
Okay.
A famous Silicon Valley-based accelerator and capital fund.
Yeah, so they got Dave McClure's attention then.
Yes, yes. Oh, so they inked a deal, they inked the deal at the end of March. And a few days later, on April 2nd, they moved to their core team to Mountain View.
Wow, that was fast.
Yes, I think they have a pretty cool concept.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So, okay. Well, this is probably the end of the show. Second, many, many things are coming on board this week. I think I've sort of picked up so much more from you this week than any other weeks about Asia.
So, oh, okay, good.
Yeah. But we got to be on sometime. So this is Bernard Leong. You can find me at bleongcw or bernardleong.com or just Google me. For This Week in Asia, you can go to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/thisweekinasia, or just sort of Twitter us at This Week in Asia and subscribe to our iTunes Music, through iTunes Music or through listening to our podcast. So we are all signing off, so we'll look forward to see you then. Bye.
Goodbye.